This is the Black and Blue Report presented by ABC Insurance Agencies, a better choice for insurance. Now from Studio B, or wherever the Saints or Pelicans might be, here's Sean Kelly.
Happy Monday, everybody, or as they're saying nationally, happy Super Sick Monday. I don't know whether you're sick or not. I don't know whether you're working or not. I'm just glad you're here. Welcome in, everybody, to the Black and Blue Report podcast. I'm Sean Kelly. We'll talk football and basketball today, and obviously I'm referring to Super Sick Monday as the day after the Super Bowl, which actually turned out to be a fantastic game. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles and their organization and their fan base. We know that excitement all too well here, and hopefully there's some, good footage out of Philadelphia today as opposed to what they'll show all over the news here the next 24 hours. But again, great football game. I couldn't believe the reaction to the halftime show, polarizing apparently. A lot of people loved it. A lot of people just bashed it. I don't see that. But anyway, otherwise, I thought it was a pretty good event. As Daniel Salas and I were talking earlier, perhaps the commercials were down this year. But the Newman guys, Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr., kind of took top prize. Nonetheless, great way to finish the NFL season. Fantastic game. They'll be breaking it down for days. We'll do a little bit of that ourselves today with Fox 8's Sean Fazan, who was in Minneapolis for Super Bowl week. So we'll get his thoughts on Minneapolis as a Super Bowl city, his takeaways from the football game yesterday, and then also the firsthand account that he can share with us about Thomas Morstead's big appearance at Children's Hospital in Minneapolis as a result of all the fundraising that went into basically the end of the Saints-Vikings game till the donation, which was Thursday or Friday last week in Minnesota. So Sean Fazan will be with us for that. Otherwise, the Pelicans come home from a good road trip, I think. They split the two games, beat the Thunder on Friday night, lost to the Timberwolves in Minneapolis on Saturday, and now we're one of three teams, I think, in the Western Conference playoff standings with 24 losses. It is really bunched up, basically 5 through 9 right now. The Clippers and the Jazz are on the outside looking in, but literally, if they fall forward, they're in. And that brings us to tonight's game against the Utah Jazz. It's a big one tonight at the Smoothie King Center. It's also the start of a two-game homestand here for the Pelicans this week that'll see Indiana here on Wednesday. So we'll get you ready for tonight's game in two different ways. Number one, we'll hear from David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, and we'll pick his brain a little bit about analytics as well this season. He is really big into that, and so he may offer a stat or two that he watches that perhaps that you're unaware of that you may find enlightening. So we'll check that out and get a read on the Jazz, who come in here red hot. They've won 5 straight, and as I mentioned, they are in the hunt here for the playoff picture. And then we'll get our first visit with Nico Mirotić today. Nikola Mirotić, one of the newest Pelicans. He is here from the Chicago Bulls. Had a double-double in his Pelicans debut on Saturday night. And I think that you'll find him to be entertaining, engaging, and fresh. I think that he brings a new breath of air here to this team. And I think you're going to enjoy. And so we'll get to know him a little bit more today as well. So lots to cover. We get a new week started on this Monday. Stay with us. We'll start with Nico. We'll do so right after this first time out.
In 1907, Dixie Beer was a balanced, refreshing lager, brewed with love and top quality ingredients. It would grow to become something that connected us. The neighborhood beer of every New Orleans neighborhood. And now, Dixie is back to that 1907 recipe. Original and reinvented, just like its hometown. Visit DixieBeer.com to learn more. And always drink Dixie responsibly. Dixie Brewing Company, New Orleans, Louisiana.
We're talking Pelicans basketball on the Black and Blue Report.
Nikola Mirotić is 6'10". He can shoot the rock. He was 42.9% from three prior to joining the Pelicans this season. He had a couple on Saturday night. He is a native of Montenegro, and he's 26 years old. We'll learn more about his family and his adjustment here to the city of New Orleans and what lies ahead in our first visit on the Black and Blue Report with the newest Pelican.
All right, Nico, be honest with me. How many times did you look down at that strange new uniform on Saturday night in Minneapolis? Because I'm sure it caught your eye. It's something different.
Yeah, I did a few times, to be honest with you, Sean. And different colors, different number, you know, everything was new. So, but I was really excited when I got there in the locker room. First thing was looking at the jersey, took a couple pictures, sent it to my family. You know, everybody was kind of excited, waiting for the game for me to watch. And it was just great, you know. But the most easier and helpful for me was the teammates was great. You know, everybody was wishing me welcome, talking to me, you know, trying to make it simple. And I had a really good day that in Minnesota. Even we lost, you know, but it was a good day.
Sounds to me like you had some butterflies in your stomach a little bit. Is that the case?
It is. Everything new, you know, it's really exciting. You want to prove, you want to do your best, you know, best job you can. And, you know, really excited to be with those guys, especially Anthony Davis, Rajan, you know, rest of the guys. You know, DeMarcus is injured, but just, you know, blessed to be here and, you know, trying to do the best I can because I know the expectations are big for me and I know I can do it. So
I've seen a number of different power forwards come through. I had a very traditional one in David West, Peja Stojakovic. You and I both know him.
Yeah.
Certainly you'd have to throw Anthony Davis in there, whether he's a four or a five. Yeah. Ryan Anderson, too. So I've seen kind of like the whole spectrum of stretch fours to traditional fours. Describe yourself. What am I going to see with you on the floor?
A little bit of everything. Okay. Like you mentioned those guys and stretch four, especially my strength is shooting, but it's not like that all I can do. I've been working a lot last few summers and especially last summer, and I put like 20 pounds on my body, getting stronger and be available when they switch on me. A lot of times go to the low post, especially against Smalling, attack the rim, improving the rebound, and especially like being, you know, in selfish teammates, you know, like play for the team, whatever team needs, you know, like do the best. And I really feel comfortable in transition, which is this team is doing great so far, sharing the ball, and I think it's going to be a perfect fit for me.
Is your game going to be different when you're on the floor with Anthony Davis as opposed to when you're out there and he's getting some rest? Or does it always stay the same?
Probably the same. Maybe it's going to change a little bit. Depends with who I'm going to play. But obviously when I'm with AD, sometimes it's easier, you know, because a lot of defense is just, you know, looking at him. My guy's helping too, so I'm going to have more shots open, which, you know that's true. So,
yes.
But with whoever I'm on the floor, I know it's a matter of energy, effort, you know, and being really consistent and focused.
A guy like Rondo comes onto this team and he immediately asserts himself as a leader and has something to say and gives direction, which is great because of what he's done in his career and everything else. Do you come in and offer right away to contribute to the culture of the team, or do you sit back a little bit? What's your vision for yourself?
Listen, I'm 26, but I've been playing since 17 professionally, you know, winning five championships in Europe, you know, so of course, I'm going to contribute to the locker room, to this team, you know, and if I got to say something, I will say, because it's nothing personal, it's all for the best for the team, you know. So I'm not a rookie, so I'm going to, you know, I have a lot of experience, even I'm 26, so, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm gonna know my role, you know, coach is going to put me in the perfect place to play, and I'm going to, you know, do what's necessary for the team.
Understand this the right way. You missed time earlier this season. Yeah. So do you have fresher legs as a result than maybe some of the guys who have been grinding a little bit longer this year?
I've been fresh, yeah. To be honest. Yeah, I've been 23 first game I missed, and I never been that much games away, you know, from the court. But at the same time, it was kind of, you know, taking something positive for that. I was at home, you know, watching a lot of games and learning, you know, like how I can help that team at that moment, you know, what to do. And when I came back, we won a lot of games and it was kind of good, you know. So, but yeah, my legs are fresh and my mind is fresh, and I just want to move forward and help this team to make a push.
Tell me about your family.
I've been 4 years married and have a son. He's 3 years and a half old, and he's very, very tall, you know, coming from Serbia, Montenegro, and very family guy, and, you know, like to be around my family. They are going to cinema, you know, or reading some book, whatever, but you know, my family is, so right now they're in Chicago, but they will come visiting me until the end of the season, and then we're gonna try to find some place for next year.
Yeah, no doubt. I hope you like to eat. You're in a good city for that.
Everybody's telling me that, so I'm looking forward. Yeah, and already they told me a few places, so I'm looking forward to go.
Let me just say this. I'm really happy you're in this uniform now. I got really tired of watching you do bad things to the team that I work for, so welcome and thank you.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Great stuff. Great guy. Enjoyed the visit very much. We'll continue our conversation about the Pelicans when we look ahead to tonight's game with David Locke next.
Now, Uber takes you couch to courtside at the tap of a button. Heading to a Pelicans game? Uber helps you pass on the parking and focus on the fun. And if you're still an Uber rookie, you can get $20 off your first ride with code PELICANS18. Uber, a proud partner of your New Orleans Pelicans.
It's Pelicans game day. This is the Black and Blue Report.
All right, welcome back. The Pelicans and the Jazz again tonight at the Smoothie King Center. These two teams have split their first two meetings of the season. Utah's red hot. They've won five straight. They've got things clicking again. Just four games back at the Pelicans in the Western Conference standings. And so this is a tight grouping and therefore a large game tonight. We're pleased to welcome in our good friend David Locke, the voice of the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz not quite maybe, I guess, ready to go away just yet. David, this has been fun to watch here lately with you guys.
It's incredible what happens when Rudy Gobert comes back.
Yes. Funny how that happens, huh?
It's amazing that if you have one of the three best players in the NBA on one side of the ball, that if he's missing, it impacts your team a great deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really – this is the expertise – that you're looking for when you bring guests on your show. I know, I realize this is really unique and special to give you that kind of insight.
All right.
That's what I got for you.
Well, but I also know that you know the reason why. And so, my friend, go deeper here as to the intangible that perhaps Rudy Gobert offers this team that is beyond the surface of the conversation.
Actually, this one, if you're an X's and O's guy, is pretty interesting. So when Gobert is out, the Jazz big men would play higher up on the pick and roll most of the time. That leaves a huge amount of space for the rest of the players to guard behind that big. So if you think the pick and roll, we'll just take a Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis pick and roll, and the big kind of stays even to the pick. Now all of the other three guys have to be covering a lot of ground, either taking away the Anthony Davis role, which would be a hapless adventure, or firing out to Darius Miller or Etuan Moore for a corner three. And what that takes is great athleticism and length. If the best team in the NBA doing that is Oklahoma City, Steven Adams plays up on the bigs, and then you have Paul George and Andre Robertson and Jeremy Grant. And you wonder why maybe when Andre Robertson is out and they said they have Alex Abrines that they're not nearly as good at this. This is why. When Rudy Gobert is in the game, the big drops. Now it allows, because he's covering the key, it allows some long but not particularly athletic players to hold to their men, take away three-point shots, not have to rotate as much, and the whole defense works a million times better.
See, this is why we have you on. See, you try to snowball us there at the start, and now we know why. So, well done, sir.
The geek in me can only stay down for so long. I am old faithful.
But you still haven't thrown out one number yet. We'll get to that
in a moment. I'm going to do the whole interview without a number.
No way. I won't let you. So.
Okay. That's like saying you're going to go to Mardi Gras and not drink.
That too. Oh, there's no doubt. Hey, David, what's the the evolution here of Donovan Mitchell, a guy that I've really enjoyed watching play thus far and probably has a vote for Rookie of the Year from this corner?
Clint Snyder said it really well in a coach's interview. He's taken 3 years of learning and put it into 3 months. And that's – so athletically he's amazing. His balance is remarkable. I think you saw that with his ability, his drives in the game where he had 41 against New Orleans in Salt Lake. His fearlessness is awesome. His maturity is great. But his learning is what separates him more than anything else. And then that gets into an interesting background. So his dad spent 7 years in the minor leagues and did not make the bigs and then moved on into the front office of the New York Mets, where he is now the director of player relations and kind of community relations for the New York Mets. So on one level, here's a kid growing up who grows up inside of a baseball clubhouse. So I think the environment of being around professional sports, he's seen these guys working. He understood how much it works, and he's seen guys being diligent to the task. Then you add into his mom. His mom's an educator who happens to teach at Greenwich Country Day. And for people who don't know about Greenwich, Connecticut, it's the number one per capita income city in America. So this is a private school in Connecticut that has the richest kids in all of America. Value judgment at that point, we're assuming it probably has a decent educational structure. But it also means this kid grew up around, as he said to me the other day when we're talking, most of my friends' dads were on the Forbes 500 list. Now, I'm not sure how many rookies in our league actually know what the Forbes 500 list is. So that would be the first thing. But that educational environment that he grew up in, because his mom put him there because she taught at this school, has led him to an example is that the Jazz sent him a video of 14 different finishes. And when I asked him what he did to learn those 14 finishes, I thought this part of his life really kicked in. He talked about, well, I broke them into 14 separate things instead of trying to learn all of them at once. I would watch the one clip that they gave me. They'd give multiple players doing a one-foot a goofy-footed left-hand layup. And they would send him 3 or 4 clips of players. And so then he said, I watched that. Then I took the computer to the gym. And then I did them at slow speed. Then I did medium speed. And then I tried them at full speed. And then I brought a defender. That mentality of learning, I think, is now the next piece of the unique upbringing that he had that has led him to be this player.
That's outstanding. And that speaks to the baseball process. It all ties in. David, you guys are, 10 games under 500 on the road, but yet what this team did at San Antonio the other night, does that signal perhaps better play away from Salt Lake City down the road?
I think a lot, again, I'm guilty of this, Sean, badly. I almost did it like a mea culpa on my daily podcast, Locked On Jazz, where I was like, okay, I'm really sorry that for 2 months we discussed what was wrong with this team and why we weren't playing well. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, my bad. Because Rudy came back and everything got better, and I was like, okay, I'm just an idiot. Like, you do it, you get caught in the middle of the, you guys went through it last year, right? Everyone like, what's wrong with the Pelicans? Like, well, pretty simple. What's wrong with the Pelicans? Injuries. And there's often a reason why one guy's making $20 million and another guy's making $3 million, and it's not just that, we're generous to one guy and not to the other. And so I think that, to some extent, I think the road thing is that Rudy is the guy who changes the game. Watch tonight. It's a little different because AD is so special, though. I'm not sure that AD has been great against Rudy in his career. He's had one or two games that have been great, and there's been some other nights where he's kind of not tapped out, but just never got his rhythm. But if fans watching tonight, the impact of Rudy is watch how many times an extra pass is made in a negative way. So we always talk about the extra pass positively, but you run an offensive system with a structure that a shot's supposed to go up at a certain point, and a guy will get to a point where he usually shoots, usually about 8 feet from the basket, and then give it off to somebody else. And now the offense is out of structure and out of rhythm, and people are shooting where they're not supposed to. And Rudy just does that throughout the entire game. In a way, a little differently than AD, though. I'd say AD at times last year, particularly, I thought had that impact on games. So I think that road factor is just Rudy's back. I do think the fatigue of our kind of had a weird little structure here. This is our third game in four nights with some bad travel. I do feel as though the fatigue could come and get the Jazz tonight.
Yeah,
it didn't show up in San Antonio the way you naturally think it was, but as I think you can attest, is that often you can tell when, you know, if you feel crappy, it probably means those guys do too. And today is not a day where I feel particularly great.
Okay. Well, I hate to hear that, but I also get it. Believe me. David Locke with us. Real quick, David, before you go, and of course we have to have a number. You know, Pelicans fans have to put up with me being more of a get-off-my-lawn guy, and I don't dig as deep as you do analytically or numbers-wise. So help these folks here listening to this podcast today understand a little something more about analytics and perhaps a number that they're not aware of that you are using to help you understand the game a little more these days.
Okay, so I would say two things. One is actually, I just, as an announcer, just would fundamentally say I use a lot of analytics because I think it helps me call the game. Like, I think I use analytics that helps me. You know, if I know that Anthony Davis drives left on a spot on a face-up 72% of the time, then if he's suddenly not getting left, I know the Jazz have done something to him defensively that makes him uncomfortable. So I think that that's a value. Here's the number. If I could have one analytical wish.
Yep.
The statistic field goal percentage needs to be abolished. And the reason is the value of a number, whenever used in a broadcast or conversation, should be to tell a story. Sometimes those of us who like analytics try to tell too complicated a story. But in this case, field goal percentage is an inaccurate story and needs to be taken out of the game. 35% of our shots count for an extra point, which means that all shots are not the same. When you have a statistic in which if you hit 4 of 10 twos and the opponent hits 3 of 10 threes, 30% is better than 40%, the statistic no longer tells an accurate story. So the way to do this is there's a statistic called effective field goal percentage. Some people call it equivalent. And if you want the just because really to make audio and radio boring, the equation is field goals made plus 0.5 three-pointers made divided by field goal attempts, right? You're valuing the three. And we had this the other night where both the Jazz and the Spurs were like 22 of 40 from the field, and the Jazz had hit 7 threes and the Spurs had hit 1. Those 22 of 40s are not the same thing. I think there's relevance to Jazz have only hit 6 of 7 shots to start the game. Jazz have missed 7 straight shots right now. Jazz have made 7 straight shots. But that's not field goal percentage. That gives you a feel of the trend of the game. Effective field goal percentage actually tells you how people are shooting.
Yep. No, it's good. It's good. And someday we'll work free throws in there too, somehow.
Right. That's true shooting percentage.
Right.
The nice thing, by the way, is that effective field goal percentage, though it's changed this year. For a long time, the average was 50, which is an easy, nice average. The average is up to 52 because guys are shooting so well this year. But you just, you know, as an announcer, I just say that. Like, league average is 52%, Jazz is 59% right now. Okay, that told the story.
Sure. Oh, you're trending in the right direction.
And actually, I'll tip the hat to our broadcast crew. They have done this. Our TV crew no longer uses field goal percentage.
We're heading in that direction. All of us are. Just you got a few folks like me that just lean on the old fashioned way. That's all.
Well, I think it also, though, honestly, not to get too inside school for everybody, but the league needs to help us. So our stat monitors don't have effective field goal percentage. While I'm calling a game live, I don't have the. If I see 22 of 40 plus 7, that's 25.5 divided by. I can't do that.
Right.
I can't do that during the game, but I can look down really easily and see that 22 of 40 is, you know, 53% or whatever it is. And that's the problem, is that that number's right in front of us, even, and it's a bad number, and it's there as a broadcaster. So there's actually an ESPN box score add-on to my Chrome that I use that has it up all the time, so now it makes it easier. But until the league embraces, this is on the league, not the announcers, and the fact that the this is totally inside baseball. I'm probably in trouble. But the fact that the league rebuilt their entire stats monitors in the offseason and didn't include a single advanced stat And they're not even complicated. They're just accurate is really stunning to me.
Yep. But there is another offseason coming. If we can fix that, and the relationship between players and officials will be off to a good start.
I think the first – you want my player official theory?
Sure. Yes.
I think it has to do with social networks.
Okay.
I think our players are finishing every game, going to their phones, and being told by fans what a piece of crap they are. And they're angry.
But they've been hearing that in arenas for 50 years, so...
No, it's different now.
Yeah, okay.
It's really different when you get on a social network compared to some single jerk who you can look at and see he's a fat slob and he lives in his mom's basement or whatever, you know, whatever, right?
Right.
Like, you can degrade that person, like, when not to say it. Like, that guy who's yelling at you, or you can even smile at him and probably win him back. But when it's coming at you just constantly the way social networking is, we talk about how it impacts our kids all the time. I think it's impacting our players, and so I think our players are angry.
There's some. I think there may be something to that. We'll see. Okay. David, let me end. Let me end on this. Good news for you and Pelicans fans. Effective field goal percentages displayed on the scoreboard at Smoothie King Center.
Strong.
Yes, you will like that.
Strong.
Yes.
Game up. Big win. Who are we giving a tip of the hat to?
Go ahead and. Well, you know what? Let's just say Josh Richardson, James Crosby, Ben Fallon, that crew. And they'll take care of the rest of the people. Yep. Good to be good to see you tonight, my friend, and I appreciate the visit today.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
You got Bye. It. David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz. Big game tonight between the Jazz and the Pelicans. Sean Fazan, we'll switch gears to football next.
The New Orleans Pelicans have the perfect way for you to do it big with your buds by scoring the Guys Night Out 6-Pack, presented by Loft 18. Packages are available for select Pelicans home games throughout the season and include 2 tickets, 4 beers, and a $20 gift certificate to Loft 18, your ultimate indoor golfing experience, all for as low as $50. So do it big with the next Guys Night Out 6-Pack on Wednesday, February 7th against the Indiana Pacers. Visit Pelicans.com to plan your next Guys Night Out today.
Want each show delivered right to your iPhone or iPad? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Black and Blue Report.
Let's switch over to football now here on the Black and Blue Report, and we're pleased to welcome in our good friend Sean Fazan from Fox 8 Sports, who's fresh back from Minneapolis and probably much warmer and a little relieved that the Super Bowl has come and gone. Welcome in, Sean.
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Thanks for having me. And yes, I'm very, very, very happy to be in some warm weather. It was unbelievably cold. I'm not built for that kind of weather.
No, I don't think anybody is truly, but it's February in Minneapolis, and it's typical. What did you think of Minneapolis as a Super Bowl city, Sean?
You know, they had some pretty cool concepts. They had a few things they had to iron out. Logistically, it's just not New Orleans. I'm so biased towards New Orleans just because it's all I know. And, you know, proximity to events is just something that just cannot be overstated. It's just so it's such a built-in convenience that New Orleans has. And, you know, it wasn't terribly logistically bad with Minneapolis. I mean, I've seen worse. But it's still getting from point A to point B wasn't always easy. They had a concept about having the, kind of the media staged in the Mall of America. So I thought it was a cool idea. You know, the fans can kind of see – some pretty big time players kind of roaming through their mall that they, you know, frequent every day. But I think at times that got a little crowded just because, you know, word gets out that, you know, Alvin Kamara or, you know, name of fame, Marcus Mariota, who was the guy who was walking around when I was there. And the crowd just got huge and it was hard to kind of walk through. But for the most part, I thought it was, you know, look, they did a decent job at hosting. And but there's just some natural advantages to having it in New Orleans. And I was at that owners meeting where they picked Minneapolis. So I always viewed this as the New Orleans Super Bowl, but, hey, it didn't happen. So I can't imagine they'll have a cold-weather city here anytime soon, but I guess we'll see.
Unless somebody builds a new stadium, because the formula
That's
now
it.
Is you build a stadium, you get a Super Bowl. So, Sean, you got back Saturday night that allowed you to watch the game here. Did you watch the Super Bowl yesterday as a fan, or did you watch it more in the way that you do for a Saints game?
A little bit of both. I was more casual about the Super Bowl, I'll be honest, because of the way the Saints season ended, and maybe it was just the fact the Patriots were in it again. It just, you know, for me, it lacked the buzz, but the game was good. So I'm always going to watch the Super Bowl just because I'm a football guy. But for me, it lacked a little bit of the buzz. And once the game got started, I really was impressed with Doug Peterson. And, I mean, he is a sharp offensive mind. And I was really, you know, impressed with the approach that the Eagles took. So I guess it was a little bit of both to answer your question. But, you know, as I usually do when football's on, I watch. So.
You also keep an eye on trends too, Sean. And yesterday we saw, you know, a record-setting day for offense in the big game. Mm-hmm. Was that an anomaly because of poor defensive play yesterday? Or is that truly a real look into where the NFL game is and where it's going?
Well, I think it's an interesting question because I think, you know, in the NFL, trends start happening and you know, you hear buzzwords. I mean, for years, the West Coast offense was the thing. You rarely hear that now. You know, then came kind of the wildcat, and then there was the read option. Now this RPO has really become kind of the hot thing offensively in the NFL. And I think defenses are slowly adjusting to it. They're not there yet. I think that was more what you saw yesterday in terms of at least with the Eagles. And then, look, Bill Belichick knows why he didn't want to play Malcolm Butler. No one else does, but I found it very suspicious why he didn't play in a game where they were clearly getting beat by the Eagles' offense. So to answer your question, I think what's happening here is Philadelphia is kind of on this front end of this RPO thing, and it's going to take a little while for teams to catch up. But I think as it typically does in the NFL, teams do eventually catch up. And we thought the zone read was going to take over the NFL, and it was pretty much a one-hit wonder. I don't know if the RPO is going to be a one-hit wonder, but I do think NFL defenses, when they have an offseason to study, generally catch back up, and it's time to start another trend. So I guess we'll see, but I do think the game has tilted toward an offensive game for years now.
Yeah, we know the rules favor that and everything else. You're right. And RPO is a byproduct of these younger quarterbacks coming in with that college mentality or the college offense that they ran. Mm-hmm. So that does make sense. Hey, Sean, I was a little jealous that you got a front row seat to watch the end of this Thomas Morstead charitable process over the last month. What was that like to see that come to fruition in a city that no one could have expected? You know, obviously, if you're a Saints fan or a fan of Thomas Morstead.
Yeah, what a story that was. And it kind of grew and grew to the point where, you know, my boss is having me go up and basically shadow Thomas for a day and a half, just covering, you know, every step of the way. It really was an emotional thing at the Children's Hospital in Minnesota. You could tell how much Thomas is a very genuine guy. And being up close with him at an event like that where, you know, there's a lot of big names. There's a lot of big, you know, a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, important people hanging out in Minneapolis at that week. And to see how genuine he was with everybody he talked to really was something. And he was really, it was a very emotional day at the Children's Hospital. I thought it was excellent the way they did it. But he was very kind, very gracious. I thought it was really cool bringing out the fourth grade class from, I think it was called Detroit Hills, to attend the Super Bowl experience. You know, it's kind of funny to see meet the Reddit poster, the original Reddit guy that posted the post on Reddit about donating to his charity.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of a cool thing about the times we live in, is something like that can really catch fire really quickly. And it wasn't anything, Thomas will even tell you, he really wasn't trying to do anything to stick out. I mean, he happened to be in the area where John Kuhn had asked him to run out back on the field to do the extra point or do the, you know, the final play of the game. And he ran back out, and it was just kind of the image of him trotting back out there knowing he had been injured that really struck a chord with Vikings fans. And look, I think this is the best of sportsmanship. You saw what Thomas did. And you saw what the Vikings fans did in response to that. And then you saw what Thomas did in response to the Vikings fans. I think it was a win-win-win, and really was a good story, not just for sports, but for humanity, let's be honest. I mean, we need more stuff like that.
Yeah, over $221,000. And as you mentioned, Sean, the story starts with those Viking fans. Were they able – did Thomas share whether or not they were able to track where all the money came from? Was it only Vikings fans, or did it catch fire beyond that fan base?
From what I understand, it was overwhelmingly from Minnesota fans.
Okay.
And a few other, I think, Saints players. And I want to say Sean Payton might have chipped in a little bit as well. It was overwhelmingly, though, Vikings fans that chipped in. You know, they like the idea. And the actual original Reddit poster, his name was Garrick, I believe, Garrick Shirts. He was really kind of playing off the whole Buffalo Bills Cincinnati Bengals thing when you know the Buffalo I think it was Cincinnati's Andy Dalton won a game that they got Buffalo into the playoffs and, yep. and they started donating to his charity and that's kind of what he was going for and you starting to see a little bit of that you know with the J.J. Watt thing and now with these last two stories with you know Buffalo and now with Thomas Morstead more and more of these things happening I think it's a good thing but to answer your question yeah I think it was overwhelmingly Vikings fans and that's why Thomas wanted to make sure he donated it back to Minnesota since that money came from them. So I think it was just an all-around great gesture.
Sean, it blows me away, and I'm glad that you touched on those other efforts here in the last few months because I think this is going to now start to be a little more regular. You know, the mm-hmm. guy that started the thing with Thomas Morstead, he said, I think he kicked in $25. And I yeah. started thinking to myself, boy, if we did something like that each week, you know, whether it be a team or a player or whatever, if you got the numbers like that, just everybody kick in $10 to $25, can you imagine how many things could get taken care of in a very quick amount of time?
Really is. And I think that's where the power of that platform comes from. I mean, it's a remarkable thing. And I think I'm with you. I think you're gonna start seeing more of this. And look, as NFL fans and doing what we do, we should all welcome it because it's all for the greater good. So absolutely. I think that we could solve a lot of society's ills. Not everything, but maybe a few things by just the generosity of NFL fans and, you know, and I guess the teams that they look up to.
Yeah, and I don't have to eat a hot pepper and I don't have to douse myself with ice cold water. I mean, literally go to the computer and click, you know, $5, $10. I mean, I was blown away as how quickly it could multiply. It was really cool. And like I said at the start, I'm jealous you got to see the finish line on that because I'm hoping there's many more finish lines to come. Good stuff, Sean.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And look, it was a fun day. It was a fun trip. It was a long day. It started at 6:40 in the morning, and it went all the way to about 7 or 8 o'clock that night in terms of Thomas's day. I had to do some live shots later on in the day. But all well worth it. And I think Thomas said that was his first experience doing all the Super Bowl festivities, and I think he enjoyed it a lot.
Yep, I hope you did too. I really do, even though it was cold.
I did. It was there were a few cool things there. But man, when that cold mindset gets in your head, sometimes it's hard to shake it, and it's just a different kind of cold than I'm used to. I mean, we get cold here, but it's kind of that dampness. But there, it's just the low temperatures. I mean, it's like it hits you in the face. It's crazy. Yeah. I'm just not built for it.
No, nobody is. -10 is -10 is -10. I don't care if you're from Minneapolis or New Orleans. So, good stuff, Sean. Thanks a lot. I'm really glad we got to get with you on this Monday. I just wanted to get your experience out there and ask you a little bit more about the Thomas Morstead story. So, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep. Sean Fazan, Fox 8 Sports. Now he gets to go do non-football stuff maybe for a day or two. We'll see.
Yeah.
Good
we'll
stuff.
See.
Yep, good stuff. Sean Fazan, David Locke, and Nico Miritich. Pretty good Monday on this Black and Blue Report. We're back Wednesday. Enjoy it. Go Pelicans tonight against the Jazz.